Hey, all you right side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. We are back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. I mean, like, just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, Alabama. And I mean, this show goes, wow, way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, from Tuscaloosa, back to gas parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. A couple more texts that dropped in. John from Huntsville. Says, Phil, fantastic monologue, definitely one of your best. I can't wait for your book of monologue collections to come out so I can give my official grade for each one, each monologue, because this one gets an A double plus. Thank you, brother. Says, also, I can't wait for another awesome episode of Butters and Lee. John is on board, Butters. We are good to hook.
Looking forward to it.
I'm saying. Brand spanking new in the text line. Mike, who is, well, this must be, okay, I'm wondering which Mike this is, because apparently he was... Well, I'm assuming that's Grissom High School class of 83, which is my class. He says, Phil, thanks for your opening comments. The climate narrative is a fraud and a money power grab must be exposed at every opportunity. Mike, GSS 83. Mike, we had a bunch of Mikes in my class. If you're from Grissom High School, tell me your last name so I'll know. But anyway, glad to have you in the text string, and we're plugging you in right now. Mark from Red Bay says, as one famous American once said, stupid is as stupid does. Well, there you have it. And Cameron from Decatur, we clarified. All good, brother. Ain't nothing to it. All right, I'm jumping right in. Dipper number one, wars and rumors of wars. Look, I don't think that I can, and I'm not going to try and be an alarmist, but I'm going to be a realist and a pragmatist. And I like to say that I'm a pragmatic optimist, generally speaking. But there's some crap going on in the world right now that we have got to keep our eyes on. Things that can spill over and things that are already happening that are affecting us. And I mean, look who's in the White House right now, right? So commander-in-chief is on vacation right now again. 39% of his presidency has been spent on vacation. Meanwhile, we have what I'm calling in this dipper, wars and rumors of wars. Let me just give you a rundown of some key things that could wind up having dramatic impacts upon us as a nation in the year 2024, which is, by the way, next week. I'll just kick it off with Iran. Why not? Let's talk about Iran, the elephant in the room, the one that foments all. Do you realize, by the way, I've got a stack of stuff here. I would bet that the vast majority of what we're dealing with in the world that could create a true threat to the United States and its allies stems from Iran in some capacity. They are the largest fomenter of terrorism in the world right now. They fund it, they train it, they supply it, they encourage it. In fact, they sometimes even demand it. Story here from Breitbart. If you think for a second that we're going to find a way to stop Iran from getting a nuclear device, it's only going to be because we took out the plant. It's only going to be because we have some kind of a Top Gun Maverick scenario where we actually have to see an airstrike. And by the way, don't think for a second Israel won't do it. But the U.S. better be prepared to support it, because the two nations that Iran says it wants to wipe off the face of the earth are Israel and the United States, the big Satan and the little Satan, according to them. Here's a story from Breitbart dated yesterday. The International Atomic Energy Agency reported on Tuesday that Iran had tripled its production of uranium enriched to 60% at its two plants in Natanz and Fordo. 60% enrichment is generally regarded as the last stop before hitting the weapons-grade purity of 90%. And by the way, it points out in this article, there is no peaceful use of uranium that requires 60% enrichment. civilian nuclear reactors only require 3.6%. So the IAEA, by the way, this is not supposition. This is not somebody heard. This is the IAEA saying it themselves. They are the International Atomic Energy Agency saying that Iran has now basically increased its pace to 9 kilograms a month, which is like an exponential increase, and they are fast approaching the ability to have a nuclear device. It says Iran's stockpile of uranium was already 22 times higher than the limits that they had agreed to in the Obama agreement, even before their pace of 60% enrichment picked up. The Biden State Department is, quote, greatly concerned. Well, okay, I guess they're on the job. Iran's nuclear escalation is far more concerning, all the more concerning at a time when Iran, as well as Iran-backed militant groups and Iran's proxies, continue their dangerous and destabilizing activities in the region. Not just the region, the world. So here's the thing. 60% enrichment capability. Next step is full-on 90% enrichment capability, nuclear device capable. There is no such thing as a peaceful need for 60% enriched uranium. And on top of that, they're sitting on a huge stockpile of enriched uranium. It does not have to all be weapons-grade capable for the purposes of building a nuclear device. You can build a pretty fine, dirty bomb out of some of that. So all I'm saying here is Iran is something worth watching. These wars and rumors of wars, this is legit. And if you think for a second that Iran won't supply one of its radical proxies with what it needs to have a dirty bomb explosion in an allied country, a NATO country, or the United States itself, look at our southern border. How easy would it be at this point for someone to sneak across? I had a friend years ago. You look up. Go ahead and look up U.S. Special Operations Manpack Nukes. I had a friend years ago who was a Manpack Nuke guy from the old days of Special Operations. When the Soviet Union, we were concerned they were going to flood across the Fulda Gap, and the whole detente was the idea of, you know, mutually assured destruction, and everybody stood and stared at each other in the Cold War. Well, it wasn't that cold. There were guys, probably on both sides, that were trained on how to infiltrate with a nuclear device strapped to their back, bury it in a key location, and detonate it from afar. Don't think for a second that can't come across our southern border. What worries me is whether maybe it already has. So yeah, there's number one on wars and rumors of wars. The UN nuclear watchdog says Iran has tripled its production of near weapon-grade uranium. That story came out yesterday. But then while we're talking about this, how many times can you get shot at before you're allowed to really, really shoot back? And I don't mean like trying to stop the bullets. I'm talking about stop the shooter. You're welcome to chip in whenever you want to here, Butters, but I'm just saying if you're aware of where the point of origin is. So when we got mortared in Iraq, one of the first things we tried to do aside from, you know, self-preservation and decide whether or not there was any damage that we needed to cover down on or injuries was to determine quickly where the point of origin was and see if we could take out the poo. They call it the poo. Find the poo. And the point of origin is where the bad guys were when they launched those mortars or lit those rockets. What are we doing right now in the Red Sea? We're just trying to shoot down those missiles before they hit us. That's it. But they keep coming. Yeah, but Phil, I mean, a few drones. Is it worth starting a war? A few drones? How about this? Story from Fox News. Dateline yesterday. The U.S. Navy shot down anti-ship ballistic missiles on Tuesday launched by incoming Iran-backed Houthi rebels in the Red Sea, signaling a significant escalation in the region, a senior defense official told Fox News. How many? How about this? We had to launch F-A-18 Super Hornets from the Eisenhower Carrier Strike Group, which in one 12-hour period, shot down 12 one-way attack drones, 3 anti-ship ballistic missiles, and 2 land attack missiles. I mean, that's a significant uptick. We have shot down nearly 100 drones in the last 60 days. 100! Y'all, this is not This is not nuisance level. These are attempts to literally do damage and create death and destruction in the Red Sea. Do you know how much of our world's shipping transfers through the Red Sea? What's the name of that strait, Butters? Do you recall?
Well, you've got the Suez Canal up there.
Suez.
And so you've got 30% of all container traffic, which they've already started diverting stuff all the way around. And you just think, I mean, the insurance costs, all the stuff. I mean, the disruption. And I'd like to point out, regardless of what drone they use, because there's a lot of drones that are, I'll say, are cheap.
Sure. Homemade.
But no matter what, I promise what we're using to shoot those things down are way more expensive than what they are. So it's not a cheap game to be playing over there.
And you and I were talking before the show, and you made the point that the first time they actually land one on a carrier, it's going to be, of course, there's damage control to be worried about, but then there's also the PR move that they're going to launch all over the internet. Look what we did. We landed on the carrier.
Yeah, it's a game we played. Fortunately, when I was over there, we weren't really getting shot at, but it's a game you play. Hopefully they're keeping the carrier and they're not actually getting shot at the carrier, but who knows what's going on, but that's nuts. So how long do you go before you,
how long?
I mean, I've tried to think of how do you equate it to, you know, if you take the football analogy, you know, if you're trying to guard the entire field of receivers versus just go tackle the daggum quarterback, just take him out. Like, why are we playing this game?
But you know what? It's got to be both.
Yeah.
Put pressure on the passer and cover down on the receiver. You got to do both. And to your point a moment ago, too, this article even says major shipping companies, including Maersk, which is one of the largest in the world, have been avoiding the Red Sea and sending their ships all the way around Africa's Cape of Good Hope and adding costs and delays by doing so. So if you think for a second this is not going to impact what you buy at the store or the cars that you purchase or anything else for that matter, or the cost of oil, or for that matter, how long it takes for parts to get here so you can get something fixed, all of it. 30% of the world's trade, you said?
Yep.
30% of the world's trade's being shot at right now on a daily basis. But what are we doing? Well, we're going to keep shooting those things down. We're going to keep shooting those things down. Well, how about you go shoot the shooter? There's an idea.
Yeah.
They did shoot the shooter somewhere else, though. And I'll tell you about that after the break. Interesting. Was it effective? I don't know. And by the way, what exactly is a proportionate response? And why would you go proportionate? I say come in heavy. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. I mean, like, wow, making common sense like a superpower. Dipper number one here, wars and rumors of wars. So, aside from the Red Sea, we have been engaged on multiple occasions, on our land-based forces in Iraq and Syria. You may not be aware, but we still do have probably upwards of 2,500 U.S. troops, mostly special operations and support troops, that are working against ISIS in northern Iraq and in Syria, also assisting Kurdish forces and having to deal with the angst of Turkey, because we do. But nonetheless, we have been facing multiple attacks. We had one just the other day, a drone attack on a U.S. installation that resulted in three U.S. casualties. Two of them were wounded and returned to duty. One of them, though, was critical and has been transported out of the country. So a story here on Reuters came out 3 days ago. The U.S. military carried out retaliatory airstrikes on Monday in Iraq after a one-way drone attack by Iran-aligned militants. There's Iran again. I mean, every time we turn around, we got troops dying or having to defend themselves because of Iranian influence, all right? Left one U.S. service member in critical condition, wounded two others. The back-and-forth clash was the latest demonstration of how the Israel-Hamas war is rippling across the Middle East. It's really not. It's because Iran is intent upon destabilizing and keeping people distracted. It says Iran-aligned groups in Iraq and Syria oppose Israel's campaign in Gaza and hold the United States partly responsible. So at President Joe Biden's direction, the U.S. military carried out strikes in Iraq, killing a number of Khatib Hezbollah militants, destroying multiple facilities used by the group. I don't know what the body count was. I'm not sure what the BDA, the bomb damage assessment, was. But we're not known in the Biden administration for taking out key targets. Just saying. But it says these strikes were intended to hold accountable those elements directly responsible for attacks on coalition forces, said General Michael Carrillo, who is Central Command's commander. Listen, we're talking about between naval and land-based forces. We have had hundreds, no kidding, hundreds of attacks. U.S. forces wounded, massive resources expended. At what point do we go and actually strike a blow that says, do it again and you'll feel it worse the next time? I mean, right now, us just knocking down their drones, all that's doing is giving them the intel on how best to attack the next time. That one didn't work. Let's try it this way next time. That one. Maybe we do three at a time. That way they can't take them all three out. They're going to, our TTPs, our tactics, techniques, and procedures, they're going to figure them out. They're going to develop their own TTPs, and they're going to wind up getting around our defenses at some point because all we're doing is just swatting flies. That's all we're doing is swatting flies. And when all you do is swat flies, how about this? Close the window so the flies quit coming in. There's your plan. What you got?
Or do they already know and they're just demonstrating our weakness by continuing to do this over again?
There's that. You're right. They're exploiting the fact that we have an administration that is scared to really do something. Absolutely. Meanwhile, our ally, our NATO ally, Turkey, is considering whether or not it will allow Sweden to join the NATO alliance. This is the same Turkey, by the way, who just the other day excoriated Israel, called out Netanyahu, declared him a war criminal, and, oh, by the way, hates the Kurds, who are our allies again in the fight against ISIS, and has launched attacks on them multiple times. So this is a threadbare relationship right now with the Erdogan government in Turkey. And once again, we're having to wait for them to decide whether they want to see NATO expanded and strengthened. Well, you know, if approved by the full assembly in Turkey, then we would agree that Sweden could join NATO. Well, all right, two issues here. One, Sweden joining NATO. There's that. Issue number two, though, is the fact that we are once again reliant upon a fairly radical organization in the form of the Erdogan government in Turkey. Wars and rumors of wars? Let me ask you this. If we wind up having an attack on a NATO ally, is Turkey really going to be there for us? Is Article 5 of the NATO Convention really going to kick in with Turkey? I don't know. Are they? Because at every single turn, it doesn't feel much like we're dealing with an ally, does it? But there's a war and a rumor of war. All right, I got several more things. We're going to clear this up after the top of the hour, so y'all stand by. Send your texts in. Tell me what you're thinking about wars and rumors of wars. 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. We got plenty. We got plenty. You know why? Because the world is not a stable place. All the more reason to have leadership in the White House that actually makes the rest of the world sit back and go, do we do something or do we not? Well, it's the Biden administration, so heck, why not? All they'll keep doing is swatting the flies. That's the plan right now. More of this, Wars and Rumors of Wars, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. all you right side.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, and yeah, sometimes the international. And like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two. And stand by, because at the bottom of the hour, we'll have an episode of Butters and Lee. That'll be coming up at 3:30. I got a text here from Anita from South Huntsville. Says, I keep hearing that Biden's weakness with Iran is concerning because someday one of their missiles might slip through and kill some American soldiers, because then things would really escalate. Nah, Biden would check his watch as the caskets come off the plane and distract the news of more Trump indictments. Yeah, I think she nailed it. I guess the other question is, would they have to wake him up to tell him what happened? There's that. So you've got Iran. You got the Houthis, you've got the Red Sea with the attacks on U.S. forces in land and sea. You've got, you know, any number of things happening. And then, of course, you got the war in Gaza. And Benjamin Netanyahu, prime minister of Israel, is facing incredible pressure now worldwide. All of a sudden, it's like everybody forgot about October 7th. I mean, how short is the world's memory, right? October 7th was how long ago? 2 months and a week? No, about 3 months, not quite three, 2.5 months ago, you're looking at, right?
So apparently the world's memory is about a month, month and a half.
Apparently, just long enough to let your meal digest and then you forget what you ate, you know? Mm. But so Netanyahu is making it very clear. We're not stopping. We're not stopping. They came into our country. They raped and pillaged. They beheaded babies. They did all these things. No, we're not stopping. We're not stopping at all. And he's got 3 points that he says has to be accomplished. That story came out December 26th, so 2 days ago. Story here on the Daily Wire. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu details his 3 keys to achieving peace. By the way, they do not involve negotiation. All right? It says, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu outlined his 3 prerequisites to successful and lasting peace between Israel and the Palestinians of Gaza on Monday. The first step involves destroying the terror group Hamas. And by the way, that'll be at Israel's discretion. That won't be Hamas saying, we're done, we're through, we got nothing left. Israel will say, well, you're still out there waving a white flag, so that makes you a target. Hamas has to be destroyed. Netanyahu said Hamas's leaders have vowed to repeat the October 7th massacre again and again. That is why their destruction is the only proportional response to prevent the repeat of such horrific atrocities. Anything less guarantees more war and more bloodshed. By the way, who created the notion of proportionate response? Do you win wars with proportionate response? No. You win wars by having a disproportionate response. You win wars by making sure the other side does not have the ability to shoot back at you again. You don't win wars by going, well, they fired once, so we fired once. Well, they launched a few mortars, so we launched a few mortars. Well, no. If somebody comes at you with a knife fight, for a knife fight, you just bring a gun, right? I'm just saying, disproportionate response, I got no problem with that. So, right now, the thing that's being said is that Israel is disproportionate in their response. Well, good on them. Anyway, number one, destroy the terror group Hamas. Number two, demilitarize Gaza. You think that's two separate things? It's not. I mean, you think that's one thing? It's not. It's two. Demilitarizing Gaza is making sure that the capabilities are no longer there. Not just Hamas, the group, and its militant activists, because there are other activist groups besides Hamas. There's Islamic Jihad, There's the Free Palestinian Front, I think it is. There's several other groups. He's saying we're going to demilitarize Gaza. These tunnels, they're gone. These border smuggling areas, they're gone. The ability to wreak havoc, gone. Command and control centers for military operations, gone. Weapons capabilities, gone. And then number three, de-radicalize Gaza. Now that one's going to be far more tenuous. I saw a story that I didn't print out for today's resources, but I just saw it earlier, right before I came on the air. One of the ladies who had been held hostage for a period of time, who's now been released in Gaza, said that at no time did she feel like there were friendly Gazans and then unfriendly ones. She said the whole place is like one big Hamas family. The Hamas rebels may be the ones doing the acting, but they are supported by the people. He wants to de-radicalize, Netanyahu does, Gaza, and I think he's right. I think you have to. Now, you can't just demand people change their minds, but you can not tolerate it, and that's going to be an interesting development to see how that goes. In the meantime, wars and rumors of wars, y'all. Syed Razi Mousavi, he's a top military advisor to Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps terrorists. Or at least he was. Story on hotair.com. Israel took him out. Where was he? Pray tell, where was this senior top military advisor to the IRGC? He was in Syria. Pray tell, why was he in Syria? I'm doing pray tell again, Butters. We're going to start doing eggnog shots again because I'm doing pray tell too often. It still cracks me up.
I think with this topic, we're on just straight shots.
Pray tell. Line them up. Yeah. So the bottom line is Mousavi was taken out, and Israel has not denied it. They basically said, yeah, it was us. We took him out. Iran now has vowed to retaliate, saying, quote, this act is a sign of the Zionist regime's frustration and weakness in the region, for which it will certainly pay a price. What a stupid thing to say. They're fighting a major front right now in Gaza. They're taking incoming fire from Hezbollah in Lebanon, and they still have the ability, by the way, to fly in to Syria and take out one of your dudes because they knew where he was. A sign of their weakness in the region. Sounds to me like they are willing to go wherever it takes in the region to do whatever it takes to get it done. Meanwhile, there's still a war in Ukraine. I haven't even touched China. Wars and rumors. I haven't even touched China. I haven't gone to the Far East at all. The Eastern Rim has not even been discussed yet.
Yeah, I think you've stayed in about a 800-mile bubble so far.
Well, there's a lot going on. And then there's Ukraine. I mean, that war ain't slowing down, by the way. The Russian bear is still getting defanged on a daily basis. TheHill.com, as of 2 days ago, reports Ukraine damaged a Russian ship in a Crimean airstrike. So the Crimean Peninsula, if you're not familiar with the map, picture like Texas, and it has the extension down into the Gulf of Mexico area for Texas. You can almost picture the Crimean Peninsula being like that for Ukraine. Well, it was annexed. It was taken over during the Obama administration, and nobody said boo about it. The Russians decided they wanted Crimea. They wanted those warm water ports. They were just going to make that theirs. They just took it. It was fairly bloodless, but it is still considered by the Ukrainians to be usurped territory, and the Russians are now claiming it's theirs. In the meantime, that's a long ways down. That is not next door for Ukrainian forces. But they made it next door. They got down there. Russian Defense Ministry has now confirmed that the landing ship Novocherkassk docked in the Crimean city of Feodosia, which is at the Black Sea. I think it's the Black Sea. Yeah. Was damaged in an airstrike, adding that two Ukrainian fighter jets were also shot down during the operation. Russian state media TASS reported one person was killed, two were injured, and an ammunition store was blown up during the attack. That is a World War II level fight over there right now. The battlefronts, the devastation, the trench warfare, the attrition of troops. We are hearing right now that Russian losses equate to somewhere in the neighborhood of 300,000 at this point. Can you imagine? We didn't lose 300,000? I mean, that's epic. The entire United States Army is what, 475,000, something like that? They lost 300,000? Meanwhile, last story before we go to the break. Six more Ukrainian pilots are now training on F-16s in Denmark. So yeah, Defense One has a piece. The war in Ukraine, it's not slowing down right now. It's going to stay on. It's going to stay hot for a while. That war that was going to be over within a week is now in, what, its second year? Or about to be? Six Ukrainian pilots are learning to fly F-16s in Denmark, the third cohort to be trained on the fighter jet since July. The pilots traveled first to the United Kingdom to hone their English skills, and then they got basic flight training in Denmark. So what we're looking at here is NATO allies are training and supplying Ukraine. The Biden administration is still the one trying to write the most checks, but there is still a war going on, and suddenly Ukraine has Abrams tanks and F-16 fighters.
Didn't we do some similar stuff prior to World War II?
Like the
supplying and supplying stuff and...
We did do some of that.
Munitions and all that kind of good stuff.
And then we got sucked in anyway, but that was when the Japanese decided they were going to come on over and make it our war. All right, y'all, wars and rumors of wars. Hope I haven't depressed you. We're going to move on. And coming up in a few minutes, we'll have a chance to see what Butters and Lee think about the world around us. Y'all stay tuned. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back.